A man and his wife walked into a dentist's office. The man said to the dentist, "Doc, I'm in a hell of a hurry. I have two buddies sitting out in our car waiting for us to go play golf. So forget about the anesthesia. Just pull the tooth and be done with it. We have a 10 a.m. tee time at the best golf course in town, and it's 9:30 already. I don't have time to wait for the anesthetic to work." So the dentist thought to himself, "My goodness, this is surely a very brave man asking to have his tooth pulled without using anything to kill the pain." So the dentist asked him, "Which tooth is it, sir?" The man turned to his wife and said, "Open your mouth, honey, and show him." This story makes me laugh, too. But it also comforts me a little. I think, oh, I'm not that bad. And yet, what are the words I have uttered more than any other to my son during his 14 and a half years of life? "I love you." "No." "Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up and get ready for school. You're going to be late. Hurry up and feed the kitties. Hurry up and do your homework. Hurry up. Why are you being so slow? Hurry up." I used to think there was something wrong with him, that he lacked the proper sense of urgency. Then it started to dawn on me that it was I who was trapped by some need for speed. When had I become so tightly wound? Before I had a kid, I thought of myself as pretty easygoing, but that illusion, as you've heard me say before, has been shot to hell. So then I really thought it was just me, that I was just some anxious, time-obsessed wacko. But further investigation has led me to the conclusion that this breathless desire to beat the clock somehow is, for the most part, more or less the water we all swim in. We live in the age of speed. And our impatience is so implacable that actress Carrie Fisher quipped, "Instant gratification takes too long." If my computer is slow to respond to anything I might be asking it to do, I roll my eyes and call it a bad name. I often use the same bad names as invective against any car that might be slowing my progress. Usually not loud enough for the other driver to hear. And as long as I'm confessing, I'll admit that I often roll my eyes and sigh when someone ahead of me in the checkout line is taking extra time to fish around in their purse for the right credit card or exact change. I think we've established I am not a patient person. To prepare for this service, I read a wonderful book called In Praise of Slowness by Carl Honoré. Oh, if you're looking for Bruno, I saw him just back that way. Okay, good. Oh, looking for Bruno's mom. Okay. Sorry, guys. Okay. As I was saying, this is a great book, In Praise of Slowness by Carl Honoré. The author takes a long look at all the forces at work in the world that make us feel so pressed for time and impatient. And he says this impatience partly explains the chronic frustration that bubbles just below the surface of modern life. Anyone or anything that steps in our way, that slows us down, that stops us from getting exactly what we want when we want it, becomes the enemy. So the smallest setback, the slightest delay, the merest whiff of slowness can now provoke vein-popping fury in otherwise ordinary people. How did we get to this point? Our ancient ancestors certainly didn't live this way. It's hard to imagine a life lived that's not ruled by time. You might think that the Industrial Revolution was the kickstart of our civilization's current obsession with speed, but the seeds were planted long before that. Once the concept of 24 hours in a day became part of the human experience, it began to chafe. In 200 BC, the Roman playwright Plautus penned the following lament. "The gods confound the man who first found out how to distinguish the hours. Confound him, too, who in this place set up a sundial to cut and hack my days so wretchedly into small pieces. I can't even sit down to eat unless the sun give leave. The town so full of these confounded dials." Hundreds of years later, but still before the Industrial Revolution, Jonathan Swift poked fun at the European obsession with time. In Gulliver's Travels, the Lilliputians decide that Gulliver consults his watch so often that it must be his god. And then engine power was created, and the need for speed became all-consuming. Suddenly, with a flick of a switch, people, information, and materials could travel across great distances faster than ever before. A factory could churn out more goods in a day than an artisan could make in a lifetime. The new speed promised unimaginable excitement and prosperity, and people lapped it up. When the world's first passenger steam train made its maiden voyage in Yorkshire, England in 1825, it was greeted by a crowd of 40,000 people and a 21-gun salute. 75 years before this, Benjamin Franklin observed the marriage between profit and haste with the aphorism that we have all heard, "Time is money." So when workers began being paid by the hour instead of for what they produced, business found itself in a never-ending race to accelerate output. More widgets per hour equaled more profit. Modern capitalism came with a built-in imperative to upgrade, accelerate, and become ever more efficient. As the pressure mounted to make every second count, pocket watches became a status symbol. Schools also backed the punctuality drive. Listen to this. In a lesson in the 1881 edition of McGuffey's Readers, it warned children of the horrors that tardiness could unleash. Train crashes, failed businesses, military defeat, mistaken executions, thwarted romances. The children read, "It is continually so in life, the best laid plans, the most important affairs, the fortunes of individuals, honor, happiness, life itself are daily sacrificed because somebody is behind time." The German philosopher and social critic Nietzsche wrote in 1880 of a growing culture of hurry, of indecent and perspiring haste, which wants to get everything done at once. That was 136 years ago. Imagine how he might view today's culture, impatient with anyone who fails to move at the speed of software. In 1982, Larry Dossey, an American physician, coined the term time sickness to describe the obsessive belief that time is getting away, that there isn't enough of it, and that you must pedal faster and faster to keep up. I don't know about you, but that rather accurately describes my experience all too often, at least when I am aware that that is the belief that is driving me. Most of the time, I'm unaware that it's the water that I'm swimming in. I'm simply anxious and breathless and muttering at anyone who's slowing me down or urging my kid to hurry it up. Am I simply the victim of a civilization completely in the thrall of the speed wrought by industrialization and technological advances? Or is something else at play here? Could it be mortality? That I live under the shadow of the biggest deadline of all? Mark Kingwell, a professor of philosophy at the University of Toronto, says, despite what people think, the discussion about speed is never really about the current state of technology. It goes much deeper than that. It goes back to the human desire for transcendence. It's hard to think about the fact that we're going to die. It's unpleasant. So we constantly seek ways to distract ourselves from the awareness of our own mortality. Speed, with the sensory rush it gives, is one strategy for distraction. Strategy for distraction. Those surround us at every turn, don't they? Our computer, email, Facebook, smartphones, iPads, YouTube, magazines, Twitter, online shopping, TV, news feeds, video games, movies, malls, amusement parks, and the siren call from every one of them to consume, consume, consume. This past July, we attended a week of UU family camp in the Mendocino Woodlands, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. There was no cell phone reception there, and no Wi-Fi. All three of us chose to be on staff, which means we helped pay our way there by working. I did kitchen laundry, and Peter and Isaiah were dishwashers. It was one of the happiest weeks of my life. Being among those breathtaking redwoods, having work to do that contributed to the common good, being part of a community of good-hearted people with shared values and a common vision, eating amazingly wonderful food, and being totally unplugged from my cell phone and computer, having all three of us off our screens for a week, was balm to my soul. I've been trying to figure out how to capture some of that in real life since coming home. My suggesting that we all be screen-free in the evenings has not been embraced in my house at all, especially with the Olympics going on. And really, I wouldn't have traded the fun we've been having cheering on those amazing athletes. But I do feel sure that deliberately unplugging from the technology that runs us is one way to reclaim some sanity. Perhaps I can't force my family to give up their screens, but I can change my own behavior. And one behavior change that I've come up with, which I'm really happy about, is a spiritual practice that I've invented to deal with my response to computer delays. When that little blue circle is endlessly rotating now, instead of rolling my eyes, drumming my fingers, and calling my computer a bunch of bad names while lamenting the time I'm wasting waiting for that piece of crap, I mean my computer, to do what I want it to, I use it as a signal to close my eyes and take four nice, slow, deep breaths. Let's do it together right now. Close your eyes and really let the air fill your belly as well as your lungs. Four slow, deep breaths. If at the end of those four breaths, my computer is still trying to figure out what it's doing, I take another four breaths. But this time, I take another four breaths, this time silently naming something for which I am grateful on each breath. So we'll do that together too. Close your eyes again. On each inhale, just let your mind see someone or something in your life that makes your life better, and then silently name that person or thing on the exhale. Okay, 4 slow, deep breaths. Feeling blessed? I am. And so far, in the few weeks I've been practicing this technique, 8 breaths have always been sufficient for my computer to get its act together. And those breaths are always this little oasis of calm and gratitude in the midst of trying to get things done. And I'm not limiting this practice to computer delays. Anytime I feel that, oh no, this is slowing me down feeling, it's become a cue for me to breathe and be grateful. I only wish I'd figured this out years ago. But I have to tell you that the only reason I figured it out now is because of this community. This project of creating worship encourages me every time I do it to look at my life and figure out what's important and how I can make it more of a sacred journey and less of an annoying burden. This is the opportunity we share to help ourselves wake up by being in community. I know from the show of hands earlier in the service that I am not the only one so caught up in the insane rush of our weird and wired 21st century. I'll bet some of you have figured out other strategies to slow down and be more patient, more loving, and grateful. I humbly demand that you share them with me, with all of us. For we are, my friends, as Unitarian Universalists, soldiers in the army of love. Let us wage the battle together against the forces that would make us forget that life is a gift. Let's envision creating heaven here on earth by shining our lights in the world and by reminding ourselves and each other, whenever and however we can, to love more and rush less. May it be so, choir.